You're back with The Takeaway from WNYC and PRX in collaboration with GBH News in Boston. From Winston-Salem, North Carolina, here's MHP.
This month, the Florida Board of Medicine voted to ban gender-affirming care for many transgender youth. The ban prevents minors who were not already receiving care from beginning treatment, such as hormones or puberty blockers. And it's the first such rule from a medical board. But it may not be the last. The vote came days after a five-hour public meeting where the board heard testimony, primarily from medical professionals who have little expertise in gender-affirming care. They heard from only a few who actually work with trans youth.
My name is Meredith McNamara. I am a physician of adolescent medicine and an assistant professor at the Yale School of Medicine.
Dr. McNamara highlighted crucial methodological flaws in the research that the board was citing. And she pointed out how the proposal flies in the face of scientifically backed guidelines established over years by the World Professional Association for Transgender Health and recommendations from accredited medical groups such as the American Medical Association. Dr. McNamara also fielded questions that sounded like attempts to bait her into confirming a right-wing narrative that untold numbers of children are being harmed and pressured into irreversible treatments and surgeries. Here's Dr. McNamara being questioned by Dr. Scott Ackerman, a member of the board.
And so in the continuum of gender-affirming healthcare, surgery is part of that. Have you?
Yeah.
And you just said, and so I'm asking you, have you ever recommended surgery to your patients?
I don't tell anybody you need surgery. You should get surgery.
Okay.
That's not how gender-affirming care works. Physicians don't tell patients what they should do with their bodies or their gender expression.
I understand. As an oncologist, I don't tell them I give my recommendation as to what they need. So just answer the question yes or no. Have you ever recommended surgery for your patients?
I wonder if maybe we're disagreeing on the definition of recommendation.
Okay, I'm done. Thank you.
I think that meeting was a perfect example of scientific disinformation. My name is Alberto Cairo, and I am an associate professor and night chair in visual communication at the University of Miami.
Much of Alberto's work is focused on how to communicate data through visuals like charts and graphs, and how those can also be used to misinform. But this became personal for Alberto when his own child began expressing his gender identity.
My child, since he was essentially a baby, since he started talking, he kept repeating, "I'm not a girl, I'm a boy." So when my child was diagnosed with gender dysphoria, I started reading about gender dysphoria, obviously, and I experienced what we could describe as cognitive dissonance between what I was reading in the research literature and what I was reading in news media, even in reputable sources such as the New York Times. And part of the disinformation that you can read in the media, or at least what is hinted in the media, is that essentially you can walk into a hospital and get hormones, right? And that is not how things work.
That's exactly what was on display during that Florida Board of Medicine meeting. Dr. McNamara wants to set the record straight.
Gender-affirming care describes a wide spectrum of ways to support people, people of all gender identities and people of all ages. For those who experience a gender identity that is not concordant with their sex assigned at birth, they may benefit from affirmation of their gender identity socially. Certain hairstyles that reflect their gender identity, clothing, perhaps a name change. Even those things alone have been shown to be quite beneficial to young people experiencing gender dysphoria or having a gender diverse identity. For teens and older patients, gender-affirming care may include medication like puberty blockers to forestall distressing change or exogenous sex hormones like testosterone or estrogen.
I think when we hear much of this language in public discourse, gender-affirming care is often described in ways that are either about irreversible medical or surgical interventions, or as though there are adults or social pressures that are negatively affecting young people. Help us understand the ways in which some of this constitutes disinformation and denialism.
First of all, the word disinformation is the one to use. Disinformation means information that is intentionally false, not accidentally false. It seems as if legislative bans on gender-affirming care for youth are accompanied by droves of disinformation, which portray this care as harmful, portray gender identity in trans and gender expansive youth as unstable, and really mischaracterize the way that this care is delivered. So when we talk about irreversibility, there are some treatments that are irreversible, like surgeries and certain types of gender-affirming hormones. But that's one very small part of the pie. And using that terminology obscures reality. It stokes fear and it fuels anti-transgender hate.
Another portion of the disinformation is all the discourse around whether this is a social contagion, whether, you know, our children are being lured into all that. Is, at least from my personal point of view, my experience, not only with my child, but also meeting many other people who are in similar circumstances, is that there's no social contagion. This is just what people are. We just need to accept the fact that there are many different ways of being a normal human being. And that is what is being rejected nowadays in society.
Meredith, talk to me a bit about where the line is in medicine between understanding where something is going wrong versus the parts of the human experience that are truly innately human, not pathological.
I take care of people who are systematically pathologized simply because they're young. I felt it deeply when I testified in Florida. It seemed as if the adults in the room had no idea what they were talking about, had no idea whose lives they were actually going to be harming, and couldn't imagine that there was a form of healthcare that could affirm a trans person and positively benefit them. You know, I want to practice medicine in a world where gender euphoria exists, and we don't have to deal with gender dysphoria anymore. The harms are so pronounced if this scientific disinformation is allowed to thrive.
Don't go away. We've got more on disinformation about trans healthcare in just a moment. It's The Takeaway.
About 600,000 people go missing every year in the U.S., prompting family members to become amateur detectives. On the trail of one missing person is journalist Tanya Mosley.
Why do you think you hesitated when we first met in telling me the full details about your mother's disappearance?
It's heartbreaking. I didn't want to break your heart.
I'm Kai Wright. Tanya Mosley joins me next time on Notes from America. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back. It's MHP with you on The Takeaway, and we're talking about the Florida Board of Medicine's recent decision to ban gender-affirming care for trans youth, including puberty blocker and hormone treatments. Now, the rule originally proposed would have allowed these young people to receive such care as long as it was performed through clinical research trials at Florida medical schools and included long-term health assessments. But that was scrapped in favor of a total ban. Here's Alberto Cairo again. His son was diagnosed with gender dysphoria.
The Board of Medicine said, we need to ban all these treatments outright because all these treatments are experimental, which is absolutely not true, right? It is true that there is a lot of work to be done in terms of research, trying to improve the evidence that we have of how these treatments operate, what the possible side effects are. I completely agree with that, being a researcher myself, right? But not having 100% certainty about something is not a reason not to act. The members of the Board of Medicine said, you know, we need more research, but they are going to ban, you know, gender-affirming care even in the context of research. So they are not going to allow research. So that is a huge contradiction. One hand, you're telling me that there is not evidence, but at the same time, you're going to prohibit me from creating more evidence and try to make these children's lives easier.
A void in research allows disinformation to thrive in its place. Here again is Dr. Meredith McNamara, who testified against the healthcare ban at a public meeting prior to the vote.
The disinformation tactics stoke fear in the fact that transgender identities exist. And biased politicians are given leave to restrict transgender existence. And the people that vote for them feel like they're doing a good thing. And it becomes a lot easier for hateful rhetoric to thrive, for gender diverse identities to be banned from school, or young people's social dignity to be impinged upon. That creates a hostile social environment. And then there's just simply the existential dread of knowing that you're aging into a world that doesn't welcome you at all. When the state of Florida published their public health bulletin decrying the benefits of gender affirming care, young people saw that. And they felt as if their lives were being threatened everywhere. These are the conversations that I have with my patients. These are the things that I comfort them around. And we've really got to reject this, full stop.
Alberta, the language that Meredith just used was in part about fear. What do you think people are so afraid of?
I honestly don't know. Maybe the people are afraid of their children not conforming to the notions that they have in mind of who their children should be. And that is not how we should act in life, right? We just need to take people as they are.
Meredith, I want to follow up again on something you said a bit previously, where you talked about young people as a category being subjected to a certain disempowerment. Can you help us to understand what you mean and what it means for you as a physician to be addressing that regularly in adolescent care?
There's a lot of infantilizing that adults do to teens because we suppose that they do not have the developmental capacity to make safe and healthy decisions. We don't recognize their strengths and their assets. And we also don't recognize that our greatest chance for success as a society is right here in front of us, begging us to listen to them. I don't want to portray adolescents as kind of weak or disempowered systematically, because young people are very vocal advocates for what they want. Some of the most powerful advocates in public spheres for transgender rights are transgender youth themselves and their cisgender peers. And it's absolutely invigorating and awe-inspiring to see how these young people are presenting themselves in hostile spaces bravely. But this work is hard. You know, I see firsthand that adolescents tend to be the last agenda item on a list of priorities. You know, young people need safe and healthy schools. They need public health measures that protect them. They need unrestricted access to healthcare that affirms who they are. They need systematic efforts to dismantle racism in every social sphere that they enter. I really believe that this issue of gender-affirming care is so pivotal. I think that trans kids we're watching them be canaries in a coal mine where scientific disinformation, if it's allowed to thrive, is going to take root elsewhere. It's going to take root in reproductive health care, other public health measures. And our most vulnerable and valued assets are the ones who are going to suffer.
So for doctors who are working with young people in any of a number of circumstances, do you have a piece of advice for ensuring that as you are working with adolescents, with young people around questions of gender and gender identity, something you'd share with your colleagues?
The most important thing is to get to know the whole person. Is to hold space for their gender identity, but get to know this person on their terms. Find out what their strengths are, reflect them back to them, verbalize the positive things that you as the adult sees so that those are featured heavily throughout any type of encounter, because building trust and rapport is what makes these vulnerable young people feel safe.
And Alberto, I'll invite you. Do you have sort of one lesson learned that you want to be certain folks are taking away?
Yeah, I do. And I'd like to give advice to both politicians and parents. So I'll begin with the politicians. Don't infantilize families. This is a term that Meredith used before. When the Florida Board of Medicine started discussing these issues lately, I submitted my own testimony to the meeting saying, our Surgeon General, Dr. Joseph Ladapo, who is the Surgeon General down here in Florida, has no experience whatsoever in these matters. No experience whatsoever treating adolescents, no experience whatsoever treating gender-affirming care, but he can read research. We have read the same research. The uncertainty of that research leads Dr. Ladapo to say, we should ban these treatments. But my take is completely different. My take is the uncertainty is a very good reason to just let families be, not to shrink the landscape of possibilities or possible treatments that they can take. Leave families alone. For parents, I would say the most important factor for a child, any child, regardless of whether the child has gender dysphoria or not, the most important factor for any child to thrive is the support of her or his or their parents. Research shows this. Research shows that when transgender kids are supported by their family, the spaces where they inhabit, like schools, when they get the support of teachers, when they get the support of their peers, these children really thrive. So that is the most important advice for parents. Be supportive.
Alberto Cairo is a parent of a child diagnosed with gender dysphoria, and he's the Knight Chair in Visual Journalism at the University of Miami in Florida. And Dr. Meredith McNamara is an adolescent medicine physician and assistant professor at the Yale School of Medicine. Dr. McNamara, Professor Cairo, thank you both for joining us.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.